All right, everyone, welcome back. Today we are tackling a big one, the Book of Leviticus,
Oh yeah, Leviticus.
which I think a lot of people hear and they think, oh no, rules, all those rules about what you can and can't eat.
Right. It's kind of like the rule book, a guide for the Israelites after they escaped slavery in Egypt. They were wandering in the desert, and it really lays out the blueprint for how they were supposed to live, how to worship, how to stay pure in God's eyes.
Okay, pure, that's an interesting one. So I
Yeah.
think we'll definitely unpack that idea of pure.
Yeah.
But first, I want to kind of set the stage a bit. So Leviticus comes right after Exodus, which is, all about that dramatic escape from Egypt,
All right.
plagues, parting the Red Sea, the whole bit.
Yeah, the big epic adventure.
So where does Leviticus fit into this grand narrative?
Well, scholars believe it was probably written down much, much later during the Babylonian exile, which, if you think about it, the Israelites had been captured, taken away from their homeland. So they're in exile, missing their home, missing their temple, really thinking hard about who they are and what their laws mean.
So almost kind of like a cultural touchstone, like reminding them of their identity when everything else is stripped away.
Exactly. Okay, things are rough, but here's what makes us unique. Here's how we connect to God, even in this mess. The powerful message, even if some of the specifics seem
Well, a little odd to us
a
now.
little odd to us now.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, I'm all for washing my hands, but some of these purity rules in Leviticus seem a little intense. So for our listeners who may not be, Bible scholars,
Yeah.
what are the big themes we see in Leviticus? Like, what were these folks obsessed with?
Yeah, there are three major areas that really pop out. First, you've got sacrifice and rituals, a lot of instructions on how to offer animals to please God. Second, we've got this whole concept of holiness and cleanliness, which goes way beyond just hand washing. And then finally, there are social and moral codes that cover everything from sexual behavior to how you treat the poor. It's like they were trying to create a whole society based on these rules.
So let's break those down a little bit, starting with the sacrifices. I mean, talk about a culture clash. Animal sacrifice isn't exactly mainstream these days.
You're telling me, imagine if your pastor told you to, bring a goat to church next Sunday. It's a completely different way of thinking about religion. But back then, a lot of cultures, they believed that offering up something valuable, like an animal, showed your devotion. It could win favor with the gods. It was very transactional in some ways.
So it was more about symbolism than, like, I don't know, barbecue.
Exactly. Think of it this way. You mess up, you feel guilty. You offer a sacrifice to make things right with God. And each sacrifice had specific rules. What kind of animal, how to prepare it, the whole nine yards. It was a way of connecting with the divine, like a cosmic transaction.
It's really hard to kind of wrap your head around that mindset.
I know.
But I guess it makes sense for folks who were trying to figure out their place in the world,
Right.
trying to understand this powerful God.
Totally. And let's not forget, they had just experienced some serious
That's
miracles.
true.
Escaping Egypt, Red Sea parting. Their faith was probably pretty strong at this point.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah.
Okay, so that sacrifices. What about this whole holiness and cleanliness thing? This seems a little.
Yeah. This is where it gets really interesting. You see, for the Israelites, being holy wasn't just about, being a good person. It was about being set apart, being different from other cultures, living in a way that reflected God's purity. And that manifested in some pretty specific rules about what you could eat, what you could touch, who you could even marry.
So it's like being holy meant being different, being special.
Exactly. They believed that by following these purity laws, they were like reflecting God's holiness in their own lives. It was a way of showing devotion, separating themselves from the influences of all these other cultures around them.
I'm starting to see how this all kind of fits together.
Yeah.
They escape Egypt, they wander the desert, and now they're creating this whole system of laws to define who they are as a people.
And to protect their identity, right? They're surrounded by different cultures, different gods, different practices. And Leviticus is saying, this is what makes us different. This is how we connect to God.
Fascinating. So we've got the sacrifices, we've got the purity rules. What about those social and moral codes? Give us some examples.
Well, some of them are pretty straightforward. Don't steal, don't lie, honor your parents. Sounds familiar. But then you have others that are more specific to their time and their culture.
Like what?
For instance, there are rules about sexual behavior, marriage, and divorce. You know, a man could have multiple wives, but a woman couldn't have multiple husbands. And there were very specific laws about what to do if a woman was suspected of adultery.
Okay. Yeah, I can see how some of those cultural differences are starting to pop up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then you have these laws about how to treat the poor, how to lend money fairly, how to treat, you know, animals even. Yeah. It's all about creating a just and compassionate society, but within their specific understanding of those concepts.
Right. It already seems like some of these laws might raise a few eyebrows today.
Yeah.
It's like peeking into a completely different world, isn't it?
It is. And that's what makes Leviticus so fascinating to study, right? It's this window into the past, but it forces us to ask tough questions about our own values and how they've evolved over time.
So it's not just a dusty old book. It's a catalyst for some serious reflection.
It is.
Okay, so we've laid the groundwork here. But where things really get interesting is when we start to see how some of these ancient laws clash with modern thinking. And that is exactly where we are headed next. Welcome back, everyone. So last time we were talking about how some of those ancient laws in Leviticus seem pretty intense.
It's true.
Especially compared to modern life.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. Let's talk about those eyebrow-raising moments.
Okay.
For example, like punishments in Leviticus. Some of them seem downright harsh, even brutal, compared to our modern justice system.
Yeah, definitely. I think the severity of the punishments is one of the things that jumps out at modern readers. For certain offenses, like adultery, the punishment was stoning to death.
Oh, wait, seriously. Stoning? That's a long way from a parking ticket.
It is, and it reflects a completely different understanding of justice and social order. For the ancient Israelites, the community was everything.
Right.
They saw wrongdoing as a threat to the whole group, not just, you know, a matter between individuals.
So it's not just about punishing the person who messed up. It's about protecting the entire community.
Exactly. They believed that sin or wrongdoing could contaminate the entire community.
Right.
And that harsh punishments were necessary to maintain that purity and order.
Okay.
It's a very collectivist mindset.
Right.
Very different from our modern emphasis on individual rights.
So it really makes you think, doesn't it? Like how our ideas about justice have really evolved.
Yeah.
But, okay, if we're talking about things that clash with modern values, Leviticus's stance on same-sex relationships is a huge one.
You're absolutely right. Leviticus explicitly condemns homosexual acts.
Right.
And the prescribed punishment is severe. And obviously, this is completely at odds with modern views on LGBTQ plus rights and inclusivity.
Yeah. It's a stark reminder of how much our understanding of sexuality and human rights has changed over time.
It really is.
And, you know, while we're on the topic of things that seem a little outdated, those dietary laws, I mean, I get that avoiding pork might have made sense back then. No refrigeration could get you sick.
Right.
But what's the deal with shellfish? No shrimp cocktails for the Israelites.
It does seem kind of random, doesn't it? But we have to remember, they didn't have the same scientific knowledge that we do today.
Right.
Their understanding of health and hygiene was based on observation, tradition, passed down through generations.
So avoiding certain animals, like pigs, which often scavenged and could carry parasites, probably did help prevent disease in a pre-refrigeration world.
Right, exactly.
But today, we know that shellfish isn't inherently unclean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating how these ancient food anxieties still kind of resonate with us today, even if the specifics have changed, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We worry about GMOs, pesticides, organic versus non-organic.
Yeah.
It's like we're still trying to draw those lines between clean and unclean foods,
right,
even with our modern understanding of science.
It's really interesting. Like the underlying anxiety is still there, but the target has shifted.
Yep.
So it's not just about saying, oh, those ancient people were so backwards.
Right.
It's about understanding, like, the human impulse behind those beliefs.
Yes.
Which maybe isn't so different from our own.
Exactly. It's about recognizing the continuity of human experience, even across vast stretches of time.
I love that. Okay, so we've got these clashes with modern thinking on morality, science, and then there's the issue of slavery.
Right.
Leviticus acknowledges and regulates slavery.
Yes.
Which is obviously something we condemn wholeheartedly today.
Right. This is perhaps the most jarring contrast with modern values. The very concept of owning another human being is fundamentally incompatible with our understanding of human dignity and equality.
it's hard to even wrap your head around, right? How could a society that, you know, valued justice and compassion also condone such a brutal system?
It's a difficult question, and there's no easy answer. I think it's important to remember that slavery was a widespread institution in the ancient world. Almost every culture practiced it in some form.
So it's not that the Israelites were uniquely cruel or barbaric. It's just that it was the norm back then.
Sadly, yes. Yeah. But even within that system, Leviticus does include some provisions that attempt to kind of mitigate the harshness of slavery.
Okay.
There are laws about treating slaves fairly, giving them rest on the Sabbath,
mm-hmm.
and eventually granting them freedom.
So it's not a full-blown endorsement of slavery, but more like an attempt to regulate it within, I guess, the existing social framework.
That's a fair way to put it.
Yeah.
Of course, that doesn't excuse the practice of slavery, which we rightly see as a horrific injustice.
Right. It's a lot to process.
It is.
You know, we're trying to make sense of these ancient texts.
Yeah.
And sometimes it feels like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
It can be a challenging process, but that's also what makes it so intellectually stimulating.
Yeah, I agree.
It forces us to think critically.
Right.
To question our own assumptions, to engage with history in a meaningful way.
I agree. But, okay, let's be real for a minute. Some people might say, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Why study these ancient laws if they're so outdated, even offensive by today's standards?
That's a fair question.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads us to the heart of what it means to study the Bible or any ancient text from a historical and critical perspective.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
Why should we bother?
Well, first and foremost, these texts are historical documents.
Okay.
They offer us this window into the minds and lives of people who lived thousands of years ago.
Right.
By studying them, we can learn about their beliefs, their values, their social structures, even their anxieties, like those food anxieties we talked about.
So it's about understanding the past, even if that past is sometimes uncomfortable to look at.
Exactly. And by understanding the past, we can better understand our own present.
Okay.
We can see how our own ideas about morality, justice, even science have evolved over time. We can trace the roots of our own beliefs and practices, even the ones that seem completely modern.
Like that saying, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
Exactly. But it's not just about avoiding past mistakes. It's also about appreciating the incredible journey that human thought has taken. Think about it. We've gone from animal sacrifices to modern medicine, from stoning for adultery to advocating for LGBTQ plus rights. It's a testament to human progress.
Yeah.
Even if that progress has been uneven and sometimes painful.
Yeah, I like that. So even though Leviticus contains some things that we find abhorrent today, it's part of this larger story of human evolution, moral, social, scientific.
Exactly.
Leviticus is more than just a collection of ancient rules. It's a reflection of the human journey, warts and all.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
But we've covered a lot of ground here, and I'm sure our listeners have plenty to think about. But before we wrap up this episode, I want to explore one more question. So, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about where Leviticus clashes with modern ideas.
Yeah.
But can we find anything in this ancient text that still speaks to us today?
Yeah.
Like, are there any timeless values hidden in all these rules and rituals?
That's a great question. And it's one that scholars and theologians have been wrestling with for centuries.
Right.
And I think the answer is a resounding yes. Even within a text that seems so distant from our own time, we can find glimpses of universal values that transcend culture and history.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Give me some examples. Like, what speaks to you across the millennia?
Well, one of the most striking things about Leviticus is its emphasis on justice and fairness.
Okay.
Remember those social and moral codes we talked about? There's a strong concern for protecting the vulnerable, the poor, the widowed, the orphaned.
Right.
There are laws against cheating in business, exploiting workers, denying people their rightful due. It's about creating a society where everyone has a chance to flourish, not just the wealthy and powerful.
Right. Even though those specific laws might seem outdated, like the underlying principles are still relevant.
Exactly.
We still strive for a fair and just society where everyone's treated with dignity and respect.
Exactly. And that's what makes these texts so powerful. They remind us that certain values are timeless, even if the ways we express them change over time.
It's like those principles are woven into the fabric of human experience.
Yeah.
Even if the patterns shift and evolve.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And it's not just about fairness. Leviticus also emphasizes compassion and caring for others.
Okay.
There are numerous laws about helping those in need, sharing your resources, showing kindness to strangers. It's a reminder that we're all connected and that we have a responsibility to look out for each other.
I love that. In a world that can feel so individualistic and competitive,
right?
Leviticus is calling us back to a deeper sense of community and shared responsibility.
Absolutely. And I think that message is more relevant than ever today.
Yeah.
We're facing so many global challenges,
mm-hmm.
climate change, poverty, inequality.
Right.
We need to rediscover that sense of interconnectedness if we're going to address them effectively.
So Leviticus isn't just about following a bunch of ancient rules. It's about cultivating certain virtues.
Yes.
Certain ways of being in the world that can help us build a better future.
You got it. It's about recognizing our shared humanity and acting accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
It's about choosing justice over selfishness,
yeah,
compassion over indifference.
That's inspiring. And it makes me think that maybe we shouldn't be so quick to dismiss these ancient texts.
Right.
Maybe there's more wisdom there than we realize if we're willing to look for it.
I completely agree. It's all about approaching these texts with an open mind,
yeah.
a willingness to learn, a bit of humility.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about, that's for sure. As we wrap up our exploration of Leviticus, what's one thing you hope our listeners will take away from this conversation?
I hope they'll come away with a sense of curiosity and wonder about the ancient world,
mm-hmm.
a deeper appreciation for the complexities of history,
yeah,
and maybe even a renewed commitment to those timeless values that connect us all.
Beautifully said. So to everyone listening, keep exploring.
Yeah.
Keep questioning. Keep those minds open.
Keep learning.
There's a whole world of wisdom waiting to be discovered, even in the most unexpected places. Thanks for joining us.